copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
All right, let's talk about the principles of effective delegation, what I call the art and science of delegation. I love this quote, and I don't know who said it. When in charge, ponder. When in trouble, delegate. When in doubt, mumble. I got to tell you, we want volunteers. We talked about that. People of character, chemistry, competence, confidence, and cash. The problem sometimes is we don't know how to delegate, how to use those people. They have all those things in place. And as I began to develop even more in leadership, some of the men in the corporate world are born-again believers that came to me and they were worried about me. And they said, You're doing everything. Because my attitude was, I want it done my way, and it's my way or the highway. I want everything done the way I want it done. And that's hard, especially in ministry, because you have an idea in mind, because God created a leadership in you. You wouldn't be in this workshop if you weren't a leader. Because it's not non-leaders that need to be concerned about this. It's leaders that know they can't do everything, but are trying anyways. And so I believe that delegation is one of the most important management skills that has to be constantly improved. I am still working on this, and I will be dead before I finish learning this. See, it's more than just the art of recruiting and wooing willing volunteers. You know, you go up to somebody and say, please, please, and they say, yes, yes. It's the science of utilizing effective principles that are transferable, they're measurable, and repeatable. In other words, if you learn to delegate, the people that you delegate to will learn to delegate to others. 2 Timothy, the things that you've heard in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to do what? Teach others also. Generationalism. See, it's not just recruiting volunteers or workers or staff. It's properly managing them. And that's why delegation is both a science and an art. Don't miss that. And we've got to learn it. And it is biblical. Moses, remember? Jethro? Moses tried to do it all himself. He was killing himself. Read Exodus 18. So he was rebuked for not delegating. Remember the text? You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. He's not just saying, you know what, Moses, you're going to die. He's saying, you're going to kill these people. Do you know how frustrating it is for people to try to get to you and you say to them, I can't, because I've got a stack of things? And you look at the list, and you realize there are things that other people could do, you just haven't given them to others, or you don't have others to do. You're going to kill them off. And that's exactly what I had to learn. Jesus delegated. Remember what he said in John chapter 10? He said, greater things that you will do. He left and said, greater things you will do. Not greater in depth. Who could do greater in depth than the Son of God? But a greater in extent. Jesus didn't say, you know what, I need to go to the Americas. You know, I need to travel around the world presenting the gospel. Is that what he said? No, he passed the baton. He delegated. You can call it what you want, assigned it. He delegated. Paul delegated. Remember what he said? Titus, he said, go to the island of Crete. Produce what is lacking. Titus chapter 1, verse 4. He sent Timothy to Thessalonica. Remember that? He sent Paul, he sent Silvanus or Silas as well. We're called to equip people. What is that? That's delegation. Ephesians 4:11, my job is not to do the work of the ministry, it's to equip others to do. I tell my staff all the time, my pastors on my staff, I don't hire you to do the ministry, I hire you to equip others to do the ministry. If I paid every minister, I'd be paying everybody that changes diapers or opens doors. I hire equippers. Equippers and delegators are the same people. Delegating means letting others become the experts and hence the best. I would submit to you that delegation is another word for discipleship. Now, there is a difference, folks, between dumping and delegation. I've taught this seminar before, and the guy said, oh yeah, I'm just going to have everybody do everything. No. I'm just going to go fishing. No. Dumping is giving responsibility without proper training and oversight. You got a pile of things to do. Here, you do it, you this, you do this, you do this. Really? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about emptying your desk of a pile of things that you have to do. Delegating is giving responsibility to others with proper training and active oversight. There's an old saying, delegating works, provided the one delegating works too. You know, you don't delegate so that you don't do anything. You delegate so you can do the right things. If you're a pastor, you delegate so that you can be about your priorities of equipping the saints, of preaching the word, of discipling people. See, people need to know that you're delegating to them so that you can be freed up to do what God has called you to do. Oh, my friend, does that motivate people? So you teach the Word of God, let's say, and they love your teaching. And you say to somebody, you know, in order for me to effectively teach, I need your help. Well, what do you need? Well, I need you to answer some phones for me. Because they're not going to study the Greek text or the Hebrew text for me. Or maybe they can. I've asked people that are scholars to say, can you help me? Do you know how much people, when I preach, when they know that they've answered phones or done this or done that or whatever it is, including getting me a glass of water on a Sunday morning before I preach, how much they feel a part of that? If you tell them they're a part, that I would not be standing there if it wasn't for them that did this and that. They feel a part of that. That's delegation, because that's discipleship. It's not assignment without purpose. They need to know that they're doing what Acts 6, remember that? When the apostles delegated to the deacons so that the apostles could be about the task of prayer and the word. Do you think Stephen wasn't capable to be a man of prayer and the word? But you know what? He saw it as his privilege to free up the apostles for that. Don't miss that, folks. You think delegating is down? No. See, effective delegation saves time. It develops people. It grooms successors. It motivates and equips others. And guess what it does? It helps us clarify our role. Define and refine our tasks. Because when you're delegating, you have to say, should I do that or shouldn't I? What are my priorities? But ineffective delegation causes frustration. It demotivates people. That's what I'm saying. We lose volunteers because we did it poorly. It confuses people. It prevents the task from being completed. It discourages. And it causes the organization to be dependent on new people from the outside. Andrew Carnegie said this, no person will make a great business who wants to do it all himself or get all the credit. So I want to talk to you, and this is not about delegation itself, all right? What are the steps to it? And I could spend an hour telling you the value of it, but let's just go with the steps. Here's how you do it. It's on your outline. I laid this out clearly for you. First, you identify the task, because you better figure out whether that's something that should be delegated. Do you think it would be appropriate if I delegated the writing of my sermons to somebody else? Oh, I don't think so, do you? There are certain things that I need to do as a pastor teacher, or I need to do as the president of Jaron Ministries. See, you delegate, you don't abrogate. You know what abrogate means? You don't give up your responsibility. I know people that delegate everything. They see people as slaves. They're users and abusers. That's not what I'm suggesting. Identify the task. Secondly, clarify it. One of the big problems about volunteerism is that we're not clear what we expect. You know, I want you to work with youth. What does work with youth mean? I can't close my eyes and see that. What does it mean? So you need to answer the questions. Who, what, where, when, how, and why. Well, I want you to do the junior high group on Wednesday night from 7 to 8:30. And here's exactly what I want you to do. People need that. You don't just go to somebody and say, I want you to work with you. What does that mean? And then you need to clarify who else needs to know what's going on. Don't leave the person to inform. You know, imagine saying to, let's suppose that you have a junior high director, right? But you say to somebody on a Sunday, you know, hey, would you help with junior high? But you didn't tell your junior high director. And they go to the junior high director and say, oh, by the way, I just want you to know I'm going to be doing such and such. You've now discouraged your junior high director. One of the things that we do is we delegate around the other people and under and over the other people instead of involving people. So you got to be very careful when you clarify the task. Select the individual or the team. And you have to ask the questions, what are your reasons? What are the benefits? What are the liabilities? You know, if you're going to pick somebody working in a certain department, you got to say, oh, by the way, here are the risks. Here's the challenges. And then assess their ability. Are they capable? Not just willing. Some people just, well, I'll just get anybody that's willing. Sometimes it's better not to have a volunteer than to have the wrong one. What do they need to do to be successful? That's your job as a leader. And explain the reasons for the task being delegated. Okay? In other words, you have to answer the question, why aren't you doing it? And why are you delegating it to that person? What's its importance, its relevance? Does it fit in with the overall scheme? What's the big picture and so forth? Next, number five, state the expected results. What has to be achieved? How are the tasks going to be measured? In other words, you don't just assign somebody a job. You ask, and by the way, here's how we'll know you're going to be successful. Here's what will look like. And if you don't know what it looks like, and you expect your volunteers to know what it looks like, let's say a simple thing like you're going to have somebody count the money at your church. You're going to have a group of volunteers do that. All right, so what does success look like? Well, first of all, do you know what you're doing here? Is that you're handling the gifts of God's people to their Lord. That's not just money. It's their worship expression. Secondly, you need to be careful and protect. That's why there's three or four of you, because human nature. Thirdly, I want you to pray over every dollar that came in, that God would use it for His honor and glory and give the leaders wisdom to dispense those monies. Four, your job is to protect. But should somebody want to steal that money, don't you give your life for this. Because you're more important. Do you know what that does to a volunteer that just on a Sunday morning is going one, two, three, four, five? They feel a part of a team. And you've communicated that. And you know how we'll be successful? We're going to see God magnify that. We're going to see, not the more money or this and that, but we're going to see God give us a right perspective on it. Number six, consider the resources required for the task to be completed effectively. All right? Discuss it with the person. Agree. Here's what we believe the job is. Do you agree to that? Be specific about equipment and money and materials and so forth. Then agree to the specific deadlines in advance. In other words, if you're giving them a short-term job, when do you expect the job to be done? So often we assign people and we don't tell them when. People will always go slower than expected. And if it's an ongoing duty, then how are you going to inspect what you expect? If it's an ongoing thing, then when do you expect some report and so forth? And make the methods of checking, controlling, clearly stated and agreed upon. Because if you don't, they're going to see you as not trusting them. See, you're going to say to the person, and by the way, once a week I'm going to call you and check on you. If you don't tell them that, and once a week you call them and check on them, what are they thinking? You don't trust them. So you tell them about your reporting function. All right, the next thing is you provide regular support and communicate often. Now, for example, you need to be clear. I'm going to phone you once a week. I'm going to email you once a week. I expect a face-to-face once a week. Or whatever way. My staff knows they have to give me a written report every Tuesday. Because we're such a large church, I want a written report every Tuesday. And with how they're doing, what can I pray for, how's their family, who are they equipping, what are their needs, how can we help them, what can we do at staff meeting, what can we do in elder meetings, how can we make their job better? Every Tuesday. Now, I take that, and then I meet face-to-face with them. And I can get past that and just pray with them. We already got the details down. And it helps them to think, us to think, and they know that it's due every Tuesday. I'm not suggesting you have to do that, but that's just a standard I have, because it makes it easy for me now to have a relationship with them, because I don't have to deal with all the details. And now I can go one-on-one with them, and how are you doing? I already know what you're doing. How are you? Provide regular support and communicate often. Give feedback on the results. People need to know how they're doing. Now, let's talk about levels of delegation, because when we think delegation, we think handing a person something. Now, obviously, the more reliable a person is, the more experienced a person is. Maybe somebody comes into your ministry from another ministry and they already know what they're doing. Or maybe they come in from another church and they already know what they're doing. So there are levels. Let's talk about basic delegation. First of all, here's how you generally do it. And by the way, these are also principles for discipleship. All right, look at them. Numbers 1 to 6. Are they on your outlines there? First, I do it and you watch. Let's suppose that I'm going to delegate a responsibility to handle our international website. So I'm going to turn it over to somebody, which I recently did. So I do it, and they watch, and they ask me questions. Then the next time we meet, we do it together, and then I ask you questions. Then the next time, you do it, and I watch, and I just inspect what I expect. Don't say a word. Just. Then the next time, you do it alone, and I support and encourage you. And the next time, you do it, and somebody else watches. Okay? Now that's basic discipleship, isn't it? You want to teach somebody to teach, what do? I do it, they watch. All right? Then we do it together. I'm there together, team teaching. Then another time I'd be in the room, they teach, I watch. Then the next time I'm out of the room, and guess what? Then the next time they're in a room and I send somebody else to watch them, and they report back. Standard stuff. But now, let's go to advanced delegation. All right? Let me put it in forms of statements, all right? Level one, and by the way, these go from one at the bottom to eight at the top. And by the way, what this is now is a progression of trust. Look at my big brown eyes again. The Bible never commands you to trust anybody. Ever. There's not one verse in the Bible that says trust anybody except the Lord. It doesn't say people didn't trust. Proverbs 31:11 talks about the husband that trusts his wife and the wife that trusts the husband. But it's a byproduct of fellowship. Did you know that? I don't trust you. I love you. I don't expect people to trust me. But trust can happen. It's just not commanded. So this is a trust process. I trust lots of people. I don't have to, but I do, because we're at this level of 8. It starts with level 1. All right? So you delegate something. All right? You wait to act until I tell you. That's what you're saying to a person. Level 1 is, you know, I want you to do something, but you wait until I tell you to do it. Do exactly what I want you to do. Follow these rules precisely. There's no freedom you have. That's level 1. Isn't that how you start? But level 2, as I want you to look into this, tell me the situation, I'll decide what to do. You have an idea. I want you to now tell me what you think, and I'll consider it. You're asking for investigation. You're asking for analysis, but no recommendation. And the person delegating retains the responsibility for assessing the options prior to making the decision. But what I'm doing is testing this brother to see how he investigates. Level 3, I'm saying to him, now I want you to look into this, tell me the situation, and then I want your opinion on what we should do. What have I done now? I'm sharing the decision process with him. You see how the trust is building? Started out saying, I'm going to tell you what to do, do exactly what I want you to do, do it now, tell me you did it. Next one is, I want you to kind of look into the situation, and I'll tell you what to do. Third one is, I want you to look into the situation. You are going to decide how we should do this. Well, what's he doing? Now, these can happen pretty fast. Level 4 is, I want you to give me your analysis of the situation. Give me your reasons, your options, the pros, the cons. And we'll discuss it. And then you're going to decide, and I'll back your decision. Wow. And some people are immediately at level 4 because you have some history. But too many people start at level 4 instead of starting with level 1. And that's where you get in trouble. Number 5, decide and let me know your decision, then go ahead unless I say not to. All right, I want you to go out, investigate, decide what you're going to do in the junior high department. Let me know what you're going to do. And if there's no problems, we'll keep going. Okay? All right, you're now controlling the action. All right, you're still watching. Number 6, I want you to decide, I want you to take action. Let me know what you did, and let me know what happened. Number 7, decide, I want you to take action. And by the way, you don't need to check back with me because I trust you. Wow, pretty good place to be. Too many of us put people there right away. Then we get in trouble. Level 8, I want you to decide where the action needs to be. All right. I want you to manage the situation, and it's your responsibility. Level 8 means now that you have the most freedom you can give to a person without them having your job. It's a pretty good place to be, isn't it? Now, what happens then if the expected job doesn't get done according to the plan? You got to start asking yourself, was I clear? Did something unexpected happen? You know, you send somebody in a ministry and suddenly what happens is that the staff leaves, the other people leave. Or you know, three families move out of the area. Something unexpected happened and things change. Or maybe the person wasn't capable. Or maybe you got in the way, you the supervisor. I cannot tell you how many times I have messed up ministry. You know, I got in the way. People were doing fine, and I had to add my 2 cents. All right, let's go on. What happens if I get blamed for its failure and lack of completion? Obviously, delegation means letting people make mistakes, right? You're not going to be an effective delegator. But what happens then if you get blamed? You're a pastor, you're a director, and your volunteer, your person under you, messes up. And everybody's going to mess up. But here's where, look at me now, you have to make a distinction between blame and responsibility. Don't miss this. Blame says it's my fault. Responsibility says it's my responsibility. It's my oversight. See, there have been plenty of times, things happen at the church all the time. Things happen at Jaron Ministries all the time. People mess up. I'm not to blame, but I am responsible. So you can say it's not my fault, but you still take responsibility, right? If that person is under you, you are responsible. You don't get to say, it's not my responsibility. You just simply, in your brain, are saying it's not my fault. So you can delegate authority, but you can never delegate responsibility for delegating a task to someone else. You're responsible. If you assigned a person a job, a task, whether paid or volunteer, you're responsible. You may not be to blame, and if you pick the right man, fine. If you pick the wrong man, then the responsibility, as he says here, is yours, not his. Theodore Roosevelt said this. He said, the best executive is the one who has sense enough to pick good men to do what he wants done and self-restraint enough to keep from meddling with them while they do it. That's proper delegation. All right? Well, let me take your questions. That's a lot to try to ponder. That's why I put this out in a detailed worksheet. I designed this for me. I didn't design this for you. I designed this because I was going to die. And I got to tell you, this has saved my neck. I'm not going to say I'm a master delegator, but I can tell you this. My things to do on my cell phone, there are 236 things to do, I counted yesterday. You know what I will do? On the way home, I will start the process of assigning those responsibilities. And then I will design a system by way of then inspecting what I expect. It doesn't matter how big your list is or how many people you supervise or don't. Delegation is discipleship. And here's what I think. I would much rather have somebody else do it than me. So my first thought whenever a responsibility comes is, I wonder who I can get to do that. Because what a joy it is to pass the baton. Part of that is I'm 64 years old. I'm not going to live long. I'd like to live to 100. So I might as well start delegating now. And I am. And a lot of the things that I used to do, I don't do, that I could probably even do better than the ones that I delegated it to, but that's irrelevant. My job is to disciple, to equip, to pass the baton, and to get as many people involved in kingdom work as possible. When I was in India, I went into a store, and I'll close with this, and I bought a spoon. And there was one person that opened the door, counties. Another person that walked me to the spoon rack, for my wife. A third person who took the spoon from the rack and handed it to the girl at the counter. A fourth person who took it from the counter, wrote a receipt, went and put the receipt, the spoon in a bag. And a fifth person who took my money. And a sixth person who walked me out of the store. And a seventh person, or Ellie, the first person that opened the door. Six people to buy a $5 spoon for my wife. All of them had jobs. And I laughed at that until I thought, that's their bowl of rice. That's their bowl of rice. And I thought, you know, in the body of Christ, there are plenty of people who can be doorkeepers in the house of the Lord. There are plenty of people. They can do simple tasks in a mighty way. Because when Jesus washed feet, he taught us a principle. A basic principle. That the more menial the task, often the more love is expressed. Don't be shy about delegating even the simplest of responsibilities so a person can feel like they're involved in kingdom work. Amen? Your questions. The question is, you know, I mentioned that successful delegation grooms your successors because it's discipleship. And I'm saying is that I, for example, I'm turning my church over to my staff. I'm the senior pastor teacher, but I have 9 pastors, but we also have a multi-site, and we have lots of services and 2 locations and videos and all that stuff, and I'm having more and more of my staff do more and more of the teaching as I back down from that, not only so I can be freed up to come to Europe and other places like that, but also to give them, because at some point I'm going to hand the baton to them. So when I delegate to them responsibilities and watch them and follow that level process that we talked about, I'm there when they teach and I watch them and evaluate and so forth, and pretty soon I say, you guys can handle this. You guys can handle this. Yeah. Nobody else? Yes, sir. Yeah, how much time do I spend encouraging people, persuading them? Well, I could do it the mafia way and have my cousin Guido do the persuading, but no, I won't do that. The bottom line is I spend a lot of time every day delegating, a lot of time. I spend more time, I won't say more time than study, but I have to tell you, what's up there in the top 5 priorities of my day is delegating, is recruiting volunteers or staff or delegating to people, because I don't see it as bothering people at all. I look through my church directory, and we have quite a large one, and I look through that and I ask my staff, are they involved? No, I don't think they are. Get them involved. So we sit down with them and say, what are your talents? What are your treasures? You know, because either you're a giver or you're a taker. And so we just show them the kingdom principle of that. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. I've got plenty of people that sit in my pews and do nothing. But we're going after them. But that old idea in a local church where 20% of the people do 80% of the work is not true in our church. It's the opposite. I would guess, in all fairness, 70% of our people are involved in ministry, either in that church or in the community, 70% in some way. Now, we tested that about 3 or 4 years ago, so in all fairness, it might be lower now, but I don't think so. So let's give it 60%, but that's certainly not 20%. Because they believe in it as a kingdom principle. And we're positive about it. We don't beg people. We tell them, this is a joy. And this is a part of what we do as a part of a kingdom family. So I spend a lot of time in answering your question. It's one of my highest priorities, 2 Timothy chapter 2. One of my highest priorities. Okay? Anybody else? Yes, sir. What he's saying is that it seems so simple what I said. When these corporate executives taught me this, I said, that's too simple. You don't understand people. It won't work. That works in the corporate world, doesn't work in the church. They said, try it. I'm telling you, looking eye to eye with you, that I had been in the ministry now for probably 25 years before I started doing this properly. I can tell you now, it works. It works. They know something, don't they? These corporate executives, they're in multinational companies and other things. I always figure, how can a guy have 500 employees? How can a guy have 1,000 or 5,000 employees? How can a guy run 3 companies? And I sat down with these men and said, how do you do that? And yet they can go out golfing on a Thursday afternoon. How do you do that? Go have a 2-hour lunch. Because I was working 60, 70 hours a week. How do you do it? And they said, let me show you how. And I said, it's too simple. Character chemistry, come on. No, it's not. It's hard to deal with people. I get it. How do we deal with gossip and other issues like that? Yeah, of course, and envy. Those are issues you're going to deal with, whether it's with volunteers or not. Those are character issues, always dealing with interpersonal relationships. Of course, that's the complexity of ministry, isn't it? But when it comes to volunteerism, how do you recruit? What do you look for? Which is the seminar here. Or secondly, how do you delegate? When you're dealing with people, you're going to deal with jealousy, power plays, the flesh, immorality. You're going to deal with interpersonal conflict, with anger, fear, loneliness, jealousy, rejection, deeds of the flesh. How do you deal with that? You deal with it in a shepherd-like way. You're always dealing with the character of your people. Always dealing with that. You will have, listen, I don't know why God didn't choose to use angels. But he didn't. He chose to use imperfect people. So you're right. What isn't simple is discipleship. What is simple is the process. You know, the Bible says simply, go into all the world and make disciples. Is it simple? No, it's a simple command with complicated implications. But as a leader, you need to know what good character looks like. What did Paul say? Go into Titus, he said. This is an island of 100 cities. Remember, the island of Crete. How simple is this for the assignment he gave Titus? I want you to go and appoint elders in every city. And he said, and men who are beyond reproach, lovers of this and that, and goes on in 1 Timothy, or Titus chapter 1, verse 5 and following. And I want you to teach older men to be, and younger men to be, and older women and younger women, and go do it. It's one of the shortest of the pastoral epistles. Simple to say. And then we work it out in detail. So the process I'm giving is very simple, but you're going to do the hard work of discipling ministry. But you're active in that. And I'm always dealing with people problems. Always. That's the challenge this side of heaven. Okay? So I don't want a simple process to suggest that you don't have to be a shepherd in every context. All right? That's a fair question, though. It really is. The whole idea of restoring a person depends on the level of the fall. How do you restore a person that has fallen? It depends. There are certain positions that, and a certain, you know, let's take our bookkeeper, and our bookkeeper embezzles money. Well, what's the restoration level? As opposed to, let's say, an usher who doesn't show up on a Sunday morning. There are levels of a fall. How do you restore them? Again, with wisdom from God, dependent on the severity of the infraction and the position that they have. You know, if one of your pastoral staff has sexual relations with one of your church members, it's a whole different thing, isn't it, to a youth worker that doesn't show up on a Wednesday night. So the answer is you're always in that process of shepherding and restoring. Thank you for your kindness, and I will see you around on that again. Thank you so much.